I'm in Ketchkamit now. Unfortunately, I had to leave New Rajadam. It was a difficult thing to do, as usual, or more than usual, because the festival was so nice. On Monday, we had a sort of a post-festival kirtan in the evening, and Tuesday morning I had the opportunity to address the deities again in a Vyaj Puja outfit. Very wonderful, beautiful experience. But duty calls, so I'm here for the week, and today we're having a National Council meeting, and Friday I'll be going up to Scotland for the weekend, and coming back again on a Monday, and I'll be Tuesday, Wednesday, we have a international cow protection seminar in New Rajadam. Shamsundar Prabhu had arranged it, and from what I hear, there'll be devotees coming from all over, so I'll be going back for that, and then coming back to Budapest. This morning here, we're reading from third canto about manifestation of Lord Brahma from Garbhadakshay Vishnu. And it was a very nice, interesting verse. Lord Brahma sitting on the lotus in this vast darkness in which the bottom is a equally vast water. And aside from that, he's alone. As we were reading the verse and the purport, I was thinking, no one likes to be alone. And people speak about loneliness. But they speak about loneliness because they're just not relating to other people. But here, you can just imagine, Lord Brahma exists alone. He's the only created entity within the universe. No one else exists aside from him, so he has no alternative other than to be alone, to be lonely. Until he starts creating, no one else is there aside from himself. Anyway, Lord Brahma, in his ignorance, contemplated, this is the verse, "Who am I that I am situated on the top of this lotus? Where has it sprouted? There must be something downwards, and that from which this lotus has grown must be within the water." In his purport, Srila Prabhupada points out that Brahma began by making the same mistake as modern scientists do, and that is the logical fallacy that if you keep going through the visible chain of cause and effect of your visible physical existence, you'll find the source of everything. So Brahma saw himself, he saw his body, and he saw that he was sitting on a lotus, he was born from this lotus. The lotus had a stem, and the lotus naturally came from the water. So he made the logical connection that he's from the lotus is from the water, and the source of all of these things must be within the water. But he was wrong. Although actually Garbhadakshay Vishnu is within the water, but just simply following the chain of cause and effect of these material things does not allow you to find the transcendental origin of these things, which is the Supreme Lord. And of course, the empirical system, or in our tradition we call it the Aroha Panta, trying to figure out what the cause of everything is a flawed system. But that flawed system in a society in which politicians, scientists, the so-called authorities or specialists on subject matter are all equally dishonest means that you have a well-developed tradition now stretching over hundreds of years, in which people are being systematically misled from the truth, because the process of finding true, complete knowledge doesn't depend upon our own sensual perception, but it depends upon being submissive enough, humble enough, and austere enough to receive knowledge, perfect knowledge, from the perfect source, from the conscious creator of water, lotus stem, lotus, and a person such as Brahma, what to speak of lesser persons such as ourselves. And that is called the avaroha process, the process of descending knowledge. What really strikes me is how powerful tradition is. Our materialistic society in which we live in which materialistic here being defined that matter is the source of everything, including life, and ultimately there's no non-material spiritual source of these things, although it's a theorem that is not proven. What to speak of its different corollaries, like the source of the universe, the theory of evolution, none of these things are proven, but because they're supported by a mainly educational system, and then of course the whole economic system that we have is fueled and furthered by the modern system of education, which is also materialism. Materialism meaning that because we're simply made out of matter, therefore don't waste your time in any type of spiritual pursuit, although you have the right to your own belief or religion, but enjoy life as much as you can, because there's nothing after this life. And that mentality feeds the hedonistic mentality of a society in which consumerism, sense enjoyment, the concerns of today, not some next life or even an eternity wherein one goes back home, back to Godhead, is the main concern, but only now, now, now. And that tradition is such a strong thing that it carries the whole world along with it. Now we call it globalization. It means the whole world has been carried away by this tradition of materialism. And the difference between our present system and that of Lord Brahma is that Brahma was humble enough to admit that he was looking in the wrong direction, that he'd made a mistake. Modern scientists and experts aren't willing to concede that they have made a mistake and that their entire methodology is flawed. Therefore, they never are able to know themselves or the Supreme Lord. And this is what Krishna consciousness preaching is really all about, somehow or another, to try and awaken this sense of honesty, to confront this lying, cheating tradition of our modern society, and challenge people to the possibility, at least beginning with that, of an alternative way of understanding things, an alternative way of finding both happiness as well as the source of existence and our own selves. So people have this choice. They have this choice to remain proud, narrow-minded fundamentalists who can only entertain that things happen one way, a way that they themselves have never even verified, but they just accept it on blind faith from other authorities, or to be more open-minded and accept that, yes, there are possibly alternative ways of seeing things, and let's see if the explanation of a personal source of existence which then means the existence of a supreme person who not only creates us and creates this world, but also gives rules by which we should live in this world, and also gives us a goal as to what we're meant to achieve in this world, which really runs against the grain of materialism, that is rather called spiritualism, in its transcendental sense, not in some kind of esoteric sense. And that is that the here and now is not what's important, but the future is what's important. It's not the body that's important, but it's the soul that's important. And since gratification should be kept to a minimum for the purpose of maintaining the body, but for the purpose, in order to facilitate, and for the purpose of realizing the mission of the soul. Dishonest people don't want to venture into this type of other, even possible alternative, because it means that the whole direction of society, of education, has to change, and that they don't want. So preaching means just that. Preaching means that we ourselves want to establish that there is an alternate way of not only seeing things, but an alternate way of living. And for that reason, devotees themselves have to set the example of minimum sense gratification and maximum interest and investment in spiritual values and the spiritual way of life. I know on numerous dozens, maybe 100 occasions of having interfaith discussions where everyone gives their vision or view of something as their life after death. What is the body? What is the soul? Who is God? And so on and so on. And the summing up is that isn't it nice that we're able to sit together and hear everyone's opinions without being prejudicial? And after the summing up, everyone goes back to their own beliefs and living as they lived before. In other words, nothing's really changed. We've simply wasted our lives. Why not have a different approach to things? And that is try to measure on the basis of some objective criteria who has got a better reasoning, a better argument. And if that better argument is there, then let me adopt it and let me change my way of life. Then actually what we meet together and speak about really has value. Otherwise, in all honesty, it's a valueless exercise, so-called interfaith meetings. Sharing, hearing, learning. No, let's analyze. See if someone has a better alternative, a better spiritual alternative. And if they do, then let me adopt that. Anyway, these were just some of the thoughts. I'm going to go, as we have a National Council meeting here today, and I have to do puja quickly, and we'll be in touch tomorrow.